Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore in the world of Warcraft. I'd say other games as well, but we got Chronicle to talk about, so let's face it, it's going to be World of Warcraft for the foreseeable future until we make our way through this epic. My name is Anne Stickney. I'm one of two lore focus writers at Blizzard Watch, and with me I've got two co-hosts. Let's switch it up. We're going to go ahead and introduce our shaman columnist as well as lore aficionado first, Joe Perez. Hey, Joe, how's it going?
Well, hello there. I am doing fantastic. Today has been a great day.
Good. It's about to get better because we get to talk lore. Okay. And our second co-host, of course, he's the other lore columnist over at Blizzard Watch. That would be Matthew Rossi. Hey, Rossi.
Hey, everybody.
How you doing?
I forever live about a year and a half in the past in terms of like personal computing technology.
Oh, at least.
My wife, like, you know how cell phone plans like nag you to upgrade your phone?
Yes.
My wife finally decided we were going to upgrade my phone because I was using an iPhone 4.
That's so fairly far behind. They're at the 7 now, aren't they? 6 or 7?
7's coming out this year right now.
Yeah.
We went in and got a 6. I wanted to get a 6 Plus because I wanted the really big screen, but they were like, we don't even make that anymore. That's discontinued. I was like, okay, I'll take the 6. And
boo.
I've been trying to figure this thing out ever since because it's not that much different than the phone I was using, but it's got like fingerprint technology and stuff like that. I'm like, you know, instead of just having to put in a code,
yeah,
I put my thumb on it and it's like it reads my thumbprint and goes, ah, the person who's allowed to use me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that is so creepy.
Mine does that. I have, but mine's a Galaxy 6 Edge, but it does the same thing. It has the thumbprint reader on it. So I'm like, ah, cool. I can unlock my phone with my fingertips. This is so very Star Trek.
I just want to know why we don't have Omni tools yet.
I don't know. It'd be great if we did.
I'd like to, you know, but then again, that would be like Apple.
Well, I mean, that's going to happen. Did you see the proof of concept somebody made with that wristband with the holo projection for the phone?
No.
So that's a thing. That is totally a thing.
Okay, you have to link me to that later because now I'm keenly interested in seeing this thing.
And they cited specifically the Omni tool as their inspiration as one of the things of why they made this.
So you know what's funny,
it's
though?
It's happening.
I actually, we shouldn't talk about this. We should talk about World of Warcraft.
Yes.
Sorry. Go on. Let's do war. Warcraft.
We've actually got quite a lot to cover today. And by quite a lot, I mean, there's an entire book here that we haven't finished talking about yet. So we're just going to cover another section of it. Of course, we're talking about World of Warcraft Chronicle. Came out a couple weeks ago. If you haven't gotten your copy yet, I'm very sorry, but this is what we're going to be discussing. So if you're avoiding spoilers, come back after you've gotten and consumed the book for your own perusal. And then you can listen to us talk about it.
Because please don't eat the book.
Don't eat the book. Just, you know, with your eyeballs, consume it. Sure.
And don't do it like a Lovecraftian thing either. Just read the book.
No, just read it. All right. That works. Anyway, so this week we're going to be talking about, last time we talked about the Titans and we talked about Sargeras, and we talked about the whole formation of Azeroth, discovery of Azeroth, this, that, the other. This week we're going to talk about what the Titans left behind, or what they created on Azeroth, and those are the Titanic Watchers, because there's several of them. They all have very interesting and intricate stories, and all of this took place well before anything, you know, present day in Azeroth. So we're still way back in the past. We're talking prior to the Night Elves here. Rossi, do you want to start? Like, why the Titanic Watchers were created and what they were doing initially?
I was actually just looking at the Discovery of Azeroth part of the book, which talks about why the Titans, you know, why the Titan Forge got made and all that. Trying to sum it up. Basically, Agrimmar was doing his whole, you know, after Sargeras went nuts and took off, Agrimmar basically kind of had to handle the whole looking for demons thing by himself. And actually, it was kind of weird. He wasn't finding as many as he expected. That was like, where are they all? This is so weird. But oh well. He's going forth through the cosmos, and he ran into, effectively, for lack of a better word, the Bowshock of Azeroth's dreams. Like, the planet Azeroth's world soul was dreaming so powerfully that he could feel it while just flying through the void.
Which is crazy. And he's it like, wasn't the void. It was the Great Dark Beyond.
Yeah, sorry, the Great Dark Beyond. He's wandering through space, essentially, and he runs into, like, if you think of Earth, like, you know, the planet Earth has radio signals we're sending out into space. Azeroth was sending its dreams out, and he could feel them, which is just unheard of for a world soul. He's like, what is that? So he turns and goes and looks, and at first he's like, wow, this is going to be the best Titan ever. Then he's like, oh no. Because when Sargeras took off, like his big I'm out speech, you know, before he threw the mic down on the ground, he basically said, you know, I did what I had to do. When I killed that world soul, I had to do it because it was so corrupted that it couldn't possibly be saved, and you're all fools. And they were all like, no, man, that's not right. And he's like, I saw it. You didn't. Now Agrimmar was looking at a planet that had the most powerful world soul he'd ever seen or heard of. And it was completely covered in old gods.
It was overrun. The Black Empire had pretty much risen.
And he's like, okay, no, I don't like this. So he ran back and told the other Pantheon, look, I don't know if Sargeras is right, but I just found a world, a huge world soul. This world soul is going to be a big deal. And it is completely covered in those things. And then so they got together and they argued about, you know, what the right thing to do was. But Agrimmar's like, we got to save this. No, we can't let this one die. And we certainly can't let it be corrupted, because that would be a huge, big deal. We got to save this one. And then everyone else was like, I don't know if we can. And Aonar is like, we have to. It doesn't matter if we can or not. We have to. It's one of us. We have to save it. And plus, you know, I happen to be big on life, so I'm not going to endorse the destruction of something so powerful. So
plus we've got that whole Sargeras thing going on, and it would be useful.
This one could be more powerful than him. So yeah, we should probably kind of not
get that on our side.
Yeah.
So they got together and came up with a plan. The plan was like, you know, we're all pretty big. I mean, that's why we're called Titans. We're actually really large. And I don't know if we should just go to the planet and stand on it. That'd be like, you know, six people going to stand on their new brother. It's
on
just
a
kinda
pebble, really.
Yeah.
I mean, the Titans are gigantic.
So instead of that, why don't we'll create servants, like something slightly below the Constellars, but we can make a lot of them. And they can operate on the scale necessary to deal with these things. Like, they'll be smaller than us, and in a way, if you think about it, it would be an awful lot like if we made tiny robots and put them inside people to cure their diseases. Essentially, that's what the Titans did, is they made tinier versions of themselves and put those on Azeroth.
Titan nanites.
Yeah, they called them the Titan Forged. And essentially everything, like the big constructs, everything from like the Keepers down to like Earthen and Mechanomes, are Titan Forged. That it's just a word for, like, you know, any Titan creation.
Born of the Titans, basically, yeah.
Yeah. And that's essentially where we get the Keepers. The Keepers were, like, the most powerful of the created versions. Like, it's sort of like they made generals and, like, leaders for them. And then they kind of made smaller ones. I don't want to say in the image of the larger ones, but, like, each of them seemed to have certain followers that it liked the most. Like, for instance, Ra'den liked the Mogu. I forget which else. Like there was Odin was really big on the Vrykul. Mm-hmm. I think Norgannon made giants, ants, and mechanomes, but I'm not 100% on that.
Yes, Loken and Mimran were his descendants, and then giants and mechanomes after that. I mean, it feels like every single thing was made with a specific purpose, right? Like, and we talked about that a little bit in some of the previous episodes, and this sort of reinforces it. Not only were they the generals created in the likeness of the Titans, but even the armies that served those generals were created with specific purposes in mind, and each one seemed to align specifically with that Titan.
Yeah. The Watchers, the Titanic Watchers, the ones like Odin and Ra and, well, Mimiron, you know, all of those, they were created specifically, they were molded in the image of the Titans themselves. So they were basically the ones calling the shots, and then you had the armies of the Titan Forge underneath them that were all working. But yeah, each one had its own specific kind of focus on what it was doing.
There's one thing that the book doesn't really even mention, and I'm not sure why, but the ones from the Halls of Origination don't get mentioned. Have you noticed that?
No, they don't. But, it's presumed they're all part of that whole army.
Yeah, I just thought that was interesting that they didn't get mentioned. It makes me wonder if there's a purpose to them that we haven't heard yet. So, but that's just a thing, yeah. In general, yes, like as you guys just said, it's they made generals and then the generals made armies. And the interesting thing was that they didn't just walk over the Black Empire.
No.
No, even with all that force, the Black Empire did not go down easy.
No, and I mean, they went after the Elemental Lords first, and it was these Titanic Watchers, the Titan Forge. They were the ones who locked up the Elemental Lords, who defeated them, and then proceeded to go on to the heart of the Black Empire itself. And I know we talked about how the Well of Eternity was formed. It was when Yasharj was defeated. And he was defeated because one of the Titans stuck their hand down there and tried to yank him out of the world forcibly. After that, it's what happened after that that's kind of interesting. Because after that, the Titan Forge, the armies of the Titan Forge went through and systematically locked up the rest of the old gods. And that's when stuff got interesting. Because Azeroth entered this state of seeming peace, but there was more going on there. So, Joe, do you want to talk about that?
I think, no, I'll let you guys go for a little bit.
Rossi, you want to talk about that?
Well, basically what happened was what we now call the Ordering of Azeroth. Once they'd gotten the old gods under control, as we talked about last week, they found out you can't just kill them. They're too entrenched into the planet. It would be like inflicting grievous harm on the planet every time you tried, and they didn't know how many it could survive. Like, could it survive if we did that again, or would we just be killing it? Like, if we're just going to kill it anyway, that defeats the purpose of all this. So they went with what we call the ordering, which was first they imprisoned each of them. Like, you can still see this at Ulduar if you go there, that the Titan Forge chains that he used to hold Yogg-Saron in place, at least a portion of him. Keep in mind that the old gods are vast. Like, the original Well of Eternity was huge, and that was like basically the blasted crater used when Yasharj got ripped up out of the planet. We know that Yogg is so big that his tentacles extend from like all the way to the Howling Fjord and north of it. What is north of Howling Fjord again? Grizzly Hills?
Grizzly Hills, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
from Grizzly Hills all the way over to Ice Crown, and you know that's up into the Storm Peaks. It's an enormous chunk of the territory that Yogg's tentacles are, you know, intertwined with, and that's probably representative of how large the rest of them are. Although we don't know. We have only seen Nazoth in a Hearthstone card, so we don't know for sure, but these things are enormous. So they built the prisons. Then they were like, okay, we've got the Well of Eternity here. Right now, the energies from it are cascading outward, and we need to deal with that. Otherwise, they could just start spreading, and life wouldn't be able to adapt to this. It's just too much power. It would start burning through things. They'd start force evolving too fast, and they'd just be destroyed. So two of them, I want to say Mimiron and Rodan, but I'm not 100% sure which ones it besides Mimiron. Do you guys remember? It was Arcadius. It was Mimiron and Arcadius.
Yeah.
Started making engines, and they made two, one for the north of the planet and the other for the south of the planet. And their goal was to essentially contain the well. and use its energies to heal the planet rather than just let them run amok. It's sort of like, in a way, it's kind of like a big cosmic bandage. Like they created these two wells, they implanted them into the world. The well of the first engine is the engine of will, and
the forge of wills.
The forge of wills, and then what was the other one? The forge of
origination.
Yeah, and they put one. You know, the forge of origination is in Uldum. It's what we call the halls of origination now. It's down there.
Yeah.
The first one, the forge of wills is north. I think it's in what we call halls of stone. Because I believe it's the one. I mean, the engine is all around. The Storm Peaks is completely. All of the Storm Peaks is just this engine.
Yep.
It gets everywhere in the Storm Peaks.
Like when you go into the Storm Peaks, you'll notice that some of the mountains, you can actually go into the mountain. There's tunnels and machinery inside. That's all part of the Forge of Wills.
And as far as the Forge of Origination and how terms of how large it was, there's parts of it in Pandaria. Like the engine of Nalek Shock is in Pandaria. That's part of the original Forge of Wills, which is in Uldum. So if you look at a map sometime, Forge of Origination. I keep saying Wills. My bad. But anyway, so they made these two and they placed them. I believe it was Raden who took the second one south, the Origination engine, when implanted it with his Mogu army. Actually, he also had Tolvir. The Tolvir were also secret.
The Anubisath. Yes. He had the Tolvir and he had the Mogu, and he took them all south to put together the Forge of Origination. On the way there, he discovered that there were remains of Yasharj. They were still there, and they were just kind of strewn all over the world, which is really kind of disgusting when you think about it. But they were also infusing the land, as the old gods are wont to do. Well, you couldn't exactly imprison Yasharaj because Yasharaj was dead, but his heart was there. So Raden decided, okay, I'm going to imprison that and I'm going to keep that isolated so that nothing can use it, nothing can get to it, and it can't do any harm to anything. And that's how the heart of Yasharaj got to Pandaria, basically.
It also, there was an interesting part specifically in that passage where they're describing that, where he sets up the vault and everything, that intrigued me because they didn't really go into too much about it. It was also that he had the intention of studying the heart in order to understand more about the old gods and void creatures to begin with.
Yeah, because the more you know, the more you can fight them.
Well, and that's true. And that you have to understand at this point, too, is this shows, I mean, exactly, they didn't really know a whole lot about the old gods and the void creatures. These were complete new entities to them on a whole. Like, they didn't understand them the same way they understood, like, shaping a world soul or anything along those lines. So I thought that was kind of interesting to show that they weren't all-knowing, so to speak.
Yeah, and that Forge of Origination, it had kind of, like, dual purposes. It was there obviously to help shape the flora and fauna on Azeroth and, you know, kind of originate it and everything. But it was also a re-origination device. And if at any point Azeroth was deemed corrupt, it would wipe out all the flora and fauna and basically reset it and start over again.
Yeah, and at the same time that was happening, we found out, we don't know exactly the origin of it, but we find out that, like, the other various Titan Keepers were doing various things, and one of them was Freya. And one of the things Freya did was the modern version of the Emerald Dream is her creation. Whether she made it out of a previous dream, you know, there was some speculation that the original Emerald Dream existed before her, and it was effectively the dreams of the Titan soul, the world soul of the planet. But she made the Emerald Dream we have today. The one that is kind of a reflection of the natural world. And she's the one that set the first guardians of it. You know, she's basically shaped it and said, okay, we need to keep this protected. That's all Freya. That's what she did. So that's, you know.
And that's where the wild gods, a.k.a. the Aspects, kind of come into play. Because
It mentions specifically that they were her, like, children. Like, she loved them.
Like, she loved them like children, but they were kind of born of the world itself.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they came out of the world. They came out of the dream, and they didn't really. She didn't make them happen.
They were just there, but they were like, oh, you, I like you, and followed her around kind of like well, baby ducks well, after she, a mama, you know?
And then I guess it should also be noted that they were born before the Emerald Dream was really recreated, and she tied them to it.
Yeah.
Like, she specifically tied them to it in ritual fashion, which I thought was kind of cool.
But at the same time, we had Northrend being set up. The Keepers, at this time, the actual prime designate of Azeroth, the one who was supposed to be in charge, was Odin. Odin was the top of them, because during the war against the old gods, Odin was the one who essentially came up with the working battle plan for how you get their armies destroyed. Because before him, they'd go in there and they'd lose a ton of Titanforged just for every inch they took. And it was like, this isn't working. We're not at this rate, I don't know if we'll be able to defeat them. And it was Odin who was like, yes, we will defeat them. We will absolutely will do so. And that got him the job, essentially. But it also meant that he was first among equals. There wasn't a boss situation. It wasn't I'm in charge and you have to do what I say. Because they could come up with plans and execute them, and he didn't have to approve of them. That's where the aspects come from.
And through all of this, throughout all of this, keep in mind, the Pantheon was still there. The Titans were still there. They were watching their little creations go through, and it was like an ant farm, almost. Or at least that's, kind of the impression I get. They were sitting there kind of watching, one of those... going, oh, look, that one's moving over there now. Okay, that one built a thing. Good thing for it to build. All right.
They were playing a game of Civ.
They were watching The Sims, yeah. So eventually, everything got ordered to the Pantheon's liking. And they were like, okay, all right. We think everything's in place now. It's time for us to go. And the Watchers were kind of sad about this, but they were also honored in a way, because they were entrusted with watching over Azeroth and making sure that that world soul got to where it needed to be. And in order to kind of commemorate the departure of the Titans, and also just to keep a record, it was Mimran and Loken. They got together and they created the Disks of Norgannon. And if you've ever played in Ulduminor or whatever, you know about these disks. You've heard about these since vanilla World of Warcraft. They were meant to record history, record the departure of the Titans, and then record everything that happened after that, just to, keep a record of it. And then the Titans left, and they left the Titanic Watchers behind. And then things started to go a little crazy.
Well, I wanted to go back to the discs. This is actually kind of interesting. So there's going to be a lot more stuff coming out regarding particularly discs. And I don't want to spoil a spoiler within a spoiler type thing. But this is referenced in upcoming literature that'll be being released, but not from a Titans angle.
Yeah.
Which I think is absolutely amazing, at least to me. So it's very cool to see, at least to me, that cataloging the events of the universe is not just a Titan and Titan Watcher thing. This exists throughout all of creation in this universe, good and bad. I think that was really cool.
Yeah. So the Titanic Watchers kind of, did their thing. And then out of all of them, they all had a purpose. And then you had Tyr. And Tyr was kind of like the Sargeras of Azeroth. Sargeras before his corruption. Tyr was there to just protect things. He was like the warrior champion of the Titan Watchers. So he kept an eye on things. And that's when we get into the events of Dawn of the Aspects. If you've read that, good. You probably know what I'm talking about. If you haven't read that, you probably should, because it was really good and it tells about the formation of the Dragon Aspects. Anyway, so here's what happens, right? The world was kind of teeming with life, and one of those life forms was the proto-dragons. And they look a lot like the proto-drakes that are up in Northern right now. They were basically pre-evolved dragons, essentially. And Tyr kind of, he was watching over all of this stuff, and then he noticed that one of these dragons, Galakrond, was getting really out of control and in a very disturbing kind of way. He was getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and he was actually consuming the corpses of his own kind. And if you read Dawn of the Aspects, it's just disgusting. The descriptions are disgusting of this guy. But yeah, he was basically kind of reanimating dead material and creating these zombie creatures, for want of a better word. It was almost like the Scourge, in a way, a little bit.
Well, I find it interesting that the description of Galkron during this point is misshapen limbs and a dozen of eyes spouted across the gargantuan form. Sounds kind of like an old god, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. But there wasn't any like direct connection made between Galakrond and the old gods. It was just necrotic energy and death energy, and that isn't void energy necessarily. It's like right it next
actually
to it.
Might be the decay stuff.
Decay
one of the
stuff.
One of the things that we know is that Azeroth, the entity Azeroth, was consuming all of the spirit element.
So it was an overwhelming source of decay, I guess.
It is possible. I don't know. But I do know that, you know, as you're pointing out, Galakrond was bad news because he just kept getting worse. Like, he started... Didn't he start eating things and then, like, he would regurgitate them as...
As like, abominations and, like, Scourge. It was like the rise of the Scourge. It was sort of like Galakrond was the first Draconic Lich King or something. It was very bizarre. Tyr saw all of this, and he realized that something would need to be done. So he went to his fellow Watchers, went to the fellow Keepers to tell him what was up. But he found them strangely unresponsive. And it was mainly because... that war with the old gods and just all of the effort involved in ordering Azeroth and bringing it to a point where they could watch it had kind of sapped their strength in a way, to the point where they weren't really paying attention to the rest of the world. They were just paying attention to their vaults, their machinery, making sure everything was kept up and running. They weren't paying so much attention to what was going on outside.
I do think that Joe's point about the old gods does make an interesting possibility here.
Yeah.
In that it's interesting that as they get settled into their job, they start becoming indifferent, just as a creature that's very similar to the old gods starts going on a rampage.
Yeah.
It does make you wonder if the old gods were already influencing them.
Well, and that's what I was bringing up about the Galakrond thing, too, because I was wondering if... Because we know that the Curse of Flesh is kind of... It's an old god thing. And we know that that's been kind of festering, and that infuses every living thing on Azeroth in some manner because, well, we have several hours of dialogue about that. So that's why I was kind of curious if it wasn't maybe not necessarily just necrotic energy that Galakrond was coming against, but if it was... a massive, because it was consuming this raw material, it was consuming this living flesh in mass quantities, if it was just reactivating this curse, and if this was like just kind of a
it was sowing the seeds of the curse of flesh or something
for dragons.
I don't know, because the thing is like the dragons weren't Titan creations. They were just proto dragons that were on the planet to begin with, so they were already organic creatures. So it wasn't really necessary for them to be affected by the Curse of Flesh, you know what I mean?
But it is a mutation. That's what I was just kind of thinking. It's like maybe it goes from stone to flesh, from flesh to warped flesh.
When I first read Dawn of the Aspects and they started talking about Galakrond and what was happening with Galakrond, my first thought was there's something going on here with the old gods. But that was never confirmed in the book. Like, it was never, that connection was never made. Instead, what happened was Tyr went to the other Keepers and the other Keepers basically ignored him. He didn't really have too many options, so he turned to the proto-drakes, and he found 5 proto-drakes who were a lot smarter than their kin, like a lot more clever than their kin, and there was Alexstrasza, Neltharion, Malagos, Ysera, and Nozdormu.
I think, weren't Alexstrasza and Ysera actually siblings?
They were siblings. They were clutch sisters. They were born in the same clutch of eggs or whatever, but
the rest were just, you know,
but they were friends, for want of a better word, or rather this situation brought them together.
Yeah. I remember that Malagos effectively adopted Neltharion and started hanging out with him, whether or not Neltharion wanted him to.
Yeah. And in Dawn of the Aspects, if you read Dawn of the Aspects, it's interesting because what happens is Caligos finds this artifact, and this artifact sends him back in time effectively to watch this as it happens. So Caligos is within Malagos, but he can't make any decisions or influence anything. All he can do is observe, and he's observing all of this as it happens. And what happened was Tyr went to them and kind of subtly influenced them to take Galakrond out, and they were successful. Like, they worked together and they actually brought him down, and he was so much larger than any of them were. I mean, he was gargantuan. You've seen his skeleton in the Dragonblight. You know how much larger he was. So they brought him down, and Tyr was kind of impressed by this, because he didn't foresee this happening. He didn't foresee them working together to this degree. But at the same time, what Tyr realized was that the world needed people to watch the surface, and the Keepers weren't doing it. The Keepers weren't going to do it.
Keepers were very much along the lines of, so what if some dragons get wiped out? As long as the world keeps, you know, focusing in the way we've designed it to focus, these things are inevitable. And he's like, yeah, you're not getting it. This was almost a calamity. They would have wiped, you know, they would have spread across the world. You're too focused on the long-term big picture and not on immediate problems.
Right. And once they were fighting Galakrond, like actively fighting Galakrond, that was enough of a task, and that was a big enough action that the Keepers started to snap out of their stupor and go, what's going on? What's happening? And after the dragons like successfully defeated Galakrond, Tyr went to the other Keepers and he said, I think we need to imbue these guys with powers, and we need to do it so that they can watch over Azeroth in our absence. Because obviously, you know, we're paying attention to this other stuff. We need someone else. And everybody else seemed to be okay with this idea and on board with this idea, except for Odin.
Yeah. And
you want to talk about Odin, Rossi?
Yeah. The thing about Odin is that during the war, he was great. He was an absolutely perfect war leader. In the quote-unquote peace, he was terrible. He didn't really get the whole idea that the Keepers were more or less equal. He was like, I'm prime designate. You should do what I say. And the rest of them were like, yeah, okay, that's not how the Titans said it, so we're not doing it. That was the first problem. The second problem was that he was very, not only was he very autocratic and he was very peremptory, he believed very strongly that if he didn't think it would work, then it wouldn't work. Like we talked before about like Sargeras, Odin kind of had that same problem in that it was his way or the highway. Like if you didn't do what he wanted, well, obviously you were wrong. As a result of all this,
Odin's biggest beef with the dragons was that they weren't Titan forged.
Yeah, the Titans didn't make them, and you know the Keepers didn't make them. They just were. They were natural creatures. They weren't, in his mind, they were no better than beasts.
And keep in mind that Odin was kind of in charge of those armies of the Titan forged. Mm-hmm. So for anyone to imply that a primitive life form should be placed in a position of power above the Titan Forged, he did not like that. He did not like that in the least.
He absolutely saw it as an insult.
Yeah.
And not just was it an insult to the armies of the Titan Forged, but to him, because
he was prime designate.
you're saying that you have better ideas than he does, and you're saying that he isn't good enough to defend the planet from his perspective. You know, he granted, Tyr could turn and say, but you didn't defend the planet. Yeah, we need them because you weren't doing anything. And that
what were the armies of the Titan Forge doing while this giant proto dragon was waging?
I know, building something.
Yeah.
Something.
So as a result of all this, Odin was like, fine, you want to have your little army of freaks, go for it. I'm not wasting my time.
And
I'm going to build the troll.
Hold up. We need to back up here though. Odin wasn't about to have any of it. So the other Keepers went behind Odin's back and made this happen.
Mm-hmm.
Ra was the one who channeled Amonthul and created Nozdormu.
That was always a big problem for Odin, too.
Yeah.
The big problem for Odin was that Ra, Master Ra, or, you know, Ra'den, as you want to call him, it always felt like Ra was really the guy everyone listened to.
Yeah.
And he was really the guy everyone looked up to. And even the Titans kind of... They made Odin prime designate, but that was almost sort of a, you did really well in the war. Here's a prize. But
it didn't
feel like they meant anything by it, because there's Ra and Freya and everybody just doing what they want. And that drove him crazy. He hated it. He hated the idea that he wasn't in charge.
So then we have Freya. And mm-hmm. Freya went ahead and called upon Aenar to bless both Alexstrasza and Ysera with two different things. Alexstrasza had dominion over life. Aenar blessed Ysera with nature's influence and basically tied Ysera to the Emerald Dream, which was Aenar's creation. And then what I find really interesting, Norgannon empowered Malagos, right? But it was Loken who did it. Loken made Malagos what he is, or what he was, rather, made him the Spellweaver. And then Arcadus was the one who called on Khazgaroth and gave Neltharion power. So all of these dragons suddenly were the dragon aspects. And they went, like I said, they went behind Odin's back to do it. And then Odin got really ticked, and now you can go ahead and go, Rossi.
Well, yeah, as everything Andrew said, he was, you know, he was angry. He felt slighted. He also felt like the keepers weren't really honoring him, that they had other people that they thought of as, you know, there's Ra channeling Amenthul. Amenthul was channeled by Ra. And it's like, that's a huge slight. So he's like, all right, you want to have your army of freak dragon things. That's fine. I'm going to make the true army that's going to protect Azeroth when your creations are
the
gone.
The Titanforge army. Yeah. The one that isn't made out of a bunch of primitive little creeps.
So he basically, first off, we really need to talk about Helya here, because he had, amongst his followers, one of the most powerful was a wizard, like a witch, really, a sorceress named Helya, who was one of the Vrykul. And he honored Helya as if she were his daughter. Like, she was very highly placed in his councils, which, you know, this is pre-Curse of Flesh. It hadn't affected her at this time. She, you know, she was very honored. She, you know, he treats her like a daughter, and she, in turn, used all of her skills in his behalf.
And she was Titanforged.
Yeah, she was absolutely
Titanforged.
And
she was a sorceress, a powerful one. So, obviously, you know, he liked her.
Yeah, she does. This is the way it's supposed to work. The Vrykul are supposed to be our army. We're not supposed to, you know, the Mogu, the Tolvia. These are our armies. We're not supposed to be using the things that just kind of happened here. That's not the point. That's not how it works. He went to her and said, I want to create this new thing. I want to create, like, this base for the army.
Glorious fortress.
And she's like, well, you've got your halls in Ulduar. Why don't we just separate them? And he was,
you want to be elevated? We'll do that literally.
So she literally ripped, like, right now we have the Halls of Lightning, the Halls of Stone, and Ulduar itself, the main fortress. There used to be a third part, the Halls of Valor, which were another place inside Ulduar. And he literally, it's even physically visible, there's a giant trench.
Yep.
Between that runs Ulduar, in front. Yeah.
Yeah. Between Ulduar and the Storm Peaks. And I'm pretty sure that's where the Halls of Valor were.
Yep.
And she just ripped it up out of the ground and made it float. So from that moment on, Odin was essentially living in his sky palace, and he'd essentially taken his ball and gone home. He'd stormed off to the heavens and run off, and he basically went to the Vrykul, any Vrykul anywhere in Northrend. At the time, that's where they were. Northrend didn't really exist as a separate place, but they were mostly in the north. And he went to them and said, if you prove yourselves to me, I will perfect you.
Basically,
and
you
will become, you know, because
you know,
I think around this time is when the Curse of Flesh is really starting to take root.
A little bit.
They're starting to notice it. And he's like, I will perfect you. I will give you new bodies that will never decay, that will never turn into this. They will be forged of storms. And they're all like, that sounds like a great idea.
So basically, prove yourselves and die in glorious battle, and you will be, your spirits will be born to the Halls of Valor, and I will make you reborn.
In order to make this work, however, he needed somebody to go find them.
Yep.
And he just assumed Helya would be down for this, because she'd always done anything he ever asked. So he didn't ask this time. He just
Odin. Yeah.
He just twisted her into the first of his Vrykul.
It was interesting what happened there, right? Because Odin basically said, okay, I need someone to volunteer to escort these dead souls here. I need somebody to do that. I'm going to go ahead and, like, I need to, like, ferry the dead. So what he did was he, like, sat there and kind of looked at the energies that were in the Shadowlands and figured out a way to transform the Vrykul into the Valkyr. And then what he ended up doing was he, like, went to the Vrykul and he said, I need some of you guys to volunteer to become these Valkyr things. And needless to say, none of the Vrykul stepped up and said, oh, me. Like, none of them wanted to do it. So Helya came to him and Helya said, "What are you doing? Why are you trying to transform the Titan Forged? You should be ashamed of this. No, you're not supposed to do this." And he had an argument with her, and that argument got really heated. And at the end of that argument, Helya said, "If you don't change your mind, if you keep trying to do this, I'm going to take the Halls of Valor and put them right back where they came from." And Odin saw that and said, "You know what? Fine. I'm going to make you the first one." And that's what happened. That's when he twisted her into the first of the Valkyr. Like, they had an argument, and he made her one, yeah, against her will.
That was possibly the biggest mistake he'd ever made. It wasn't the last mistake he'd make. He then basically acted like nothing was wrong with this. Like, he'd done it.
I mean, he's the best. He's got the best ideas. Yeah. Of course there's nothing wrong
with it. He did it. It was done. And that's the beginning and end of it.
And unfortunately, she was like, because he transformed her, she was under his command.
Yes.
She could not disobey. So, and she was ticked.
She began basically, she was the first, but, you know, then she started making more because he told her to. And then he, you know, this proceeded on for quite some time. And now we have to move on to Loken.
Yes.
So do you want to do that one, or you want me to do it?
Why don't you go ahead and get started with that?
We start off with Loken. Loken, it was, you know, he was one of the various Titanic watchers or keepers, whatever term you want to use for them. And he was, as you pointed out, he was the one Norgannon had chosen.
Yeah.
He was
along with Mimiron.
And it was Loken and Mimiron. They both embodied aspects of Norgannon. Mimiron was the inventive side. Loken was more the intellectually curious side. You know, Mimiron would do things. Loken wondered why you do things. And he, you know, looked into that. Unfortunately, he was curious about lots of things. One of the things he was curious about was the old god they were all sitting on.
Yeah. But no more about that thing.
But that, you know, he studied it, but he wasn't really that serious about it. The other thing he was curious about was Thorim's wife, Sif. And unlike what you might expect, Sif actually kind of reciprocated it. It wasn't a one-sided Loken chasing after her thing. The two of them, you know, she was very compassionate, and her husband was Thorim. The guy liked to hit things with a hammer. He didn't have a lot going on intellectually to speak of. He wasn't a thinker. You know, he wasn't Tyr either. Tyr was a watchful sort, so Tyr actually ruminated quite a bit, but Thorim didn't. You told Thorim to hit something with a hammer, and that's what he did. He just, you know. So Sif kind of had a certain void in her life.
Yeah, but
You
also have to point out here, too, Loken, he was observing the old god, yes.
Yeah.
He was interested in Sif, yes. And then somewhere in the middle of this, we talked about this last time, when the Titans were destroyed, they sent their spirits into their creations, like the last vestiges of their consciousness.
Yeah, each of the keepers got hit by some of it.
While all this was going on, Loken got slammed with that. Mm-hmm. And didn't quite understand what was going on, but it not only confused him, it kind of threw him into this kind of unsettled state of despair almost. And Yogg-Saron, being right there, being within close proximity to Loken, sensed that kind of general unhappiness and that general despair and confusion, and decided to kind of prey on that.
Yeah, so basically, it's kind of interesting because it sort of has certain aspects of another time that this happens in the Warcraft story. The Kil'jaeden appears to Ner'zhul as his wife. Yogg begins manipulating Loken's feelings for Sif.
Oh, and big time.
Loken is like, finally goes to her and says, "Look, I love you. You know, you have to come away with me. You know, just leave Thorim." And she's like, "Look, I can't. I feel things about you, but he's my husband, and it would be wrong. It would hurt him, and there's no, you know, we can't do this." And in that moment, Loken killed her. He snapped and he killed her. And almost immediately, he's like, "Oh my Titans! What did I just do? Oh!" And this is a part where she began talking to him from beyond the Veil of Death. Of course, you know,
you
might want to look at that one and think real hard about it, Loken. But she's like, no, I forgive you. I forgive you for killing me. But we can't let them know what happened. It would cause tremendous problems if Thorim knew you'd killed me.
Call of the Titan Forge would descend in a like civil war, keeper against keeper. It'd just be madness. So we need to cover this up.
Yeah. What we should do is frame somebody else for it. And Loken went along with this because he'd also kind of gotten all of Nurganon's deviousness. And we'll find that we found out that Nurganon is the tricksy hobbit who managed to put the Titan's souls in the keeper's bodies in the first place. So he was not one for, you know, half measures. Loken basically sets this whole thing up that it looks like the frost giants under King Thrym killed Sif. And Thorim, being Thorim, tried to hit this problem with a hammer.
Yeah, so it was basically storm giant against ice giant.
Then Loken had the titanic balls to blame Thorim.
Yep.
For everything. Like, if you hadn't gone after them with your hammer, everything would be fine. Which caused Thorim to go off in a fevered sulk for however many thousands of years. I mean, this is before, like, this is way before the Sundering, so we're talking like 16,000 years or so. Thorim went up on top of his mountain and brooded in his temple. Because Thorim was the one guy Loken absolutely did not want to fight.
Yeah.
Loken did not want to go into a one-on-one fight with that dude.
And Sif was like, oh no, these giants are fighting each other. Loken, you know what you should do? You should activate the Forge of Wills and build like an army. You need to build a new army, and you need to do that to just, you know, protect Ulduar, because that's really important. Mm-hmm. Of course, what Loken didn't know was that Yogg-Saron had already kind of seeped into the Forge of Wills and incorporated the Curse of Flesh within the creation engine. So every creature created by the Forge of Wills from that moment on was afflicted with the Curse of Flesh.
Or that came into contact with anything made by the Forge of Wills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So even the ones that were made before this started getting it. It started spreading through everything. And it was so bad that at one point Loken sent runners south to find out why is Ra'den not come back during all of this? We've got all this stuff going on and I have not heard from Ra. I need to know what he's doing. So he sent runners south and they spread the Curse of Flesh down there. And this is where we come back to Odin and Helya. Loken is looking around at this point at what's happened and he's like, okay, I can fix this. I can fix this, but I need to be prime designate.
And, well, he's more like it's more like he kind of is like, okay, all this chaos is going on down here, but everybody seems to be on the down low. And then he looked up and went, oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to get rid of that guy.
So he went to Helya and said, look, you're under Odin's control. And I've always personally felt that was very unfair. Like, I don't think he should have done that to you. Do you? I mean, you know, that seems wrong. How about I fix it so you can act on your own again?
I'll set you free.
Yeah. And you know, maybe as a little, you know, quid pro quo, I scratch your back, you banish him forever so he can't come back.
Just seal off those halls up there so that nobody can come out of. Just seal them off from the rest of the world. And Helya's like, well, yeah.
I am so down with that.
Yeah.
And that is literally what happened. She he broke Odin's control of her, and she immediately locked up the Halls of Valor. Because she's the one that created it in the first place. She knew exactly how to do it. She basically wove the magic so that, you know, none of the Stormforged already in there could leave. And the problem with that was that left a huge power vacuum, first up, which Helya immediately went and filled in the Shadowlands. She created her own, like, you know, her boat of evil and Helheim.
Yeah, and she took all the Valkyr that had escaped the Halls of Valor and said, yeah, we're going to go build our own sandbox over there, and it's way better.
It's going to have swamp mist monsters, and it's just going to be great.
It's going to be fantastic.
This left Loken in position to basically, Thorim was out, you know, basically sulking. Odin was locked up. Ra'den was in the south and was like too busy to do anything. Loken's like, okay, we need a prime designate. I am going to heroically step forth and fill this role because someone's got to bring order to this whole thing, this chaotic civil war. I'm going to fix everything. Surely no one will ever suspect I am up to no good. Unfortunately for him, Tyrion Arcadius suspected he was up to no good.
Well, and beyond that, we had like the actual keepers that were left in Ulduar, including his best buddy and cohort in creation, Mimiron. And Mimiron was looking at all of this new Titan Forge that was being produced by the Forge of Wills and kind of like looked at it and went, hey, there's a problem here in the Matrix. And Logan, did you know about this? Because we need to like...
We gotta strip back the product line.
Yeah, we need to figure out what's going on here. And
yeah, of course, Mimiron saw no problem in telling Logan this because they were buddies.
They were buddies, yeah. And Logan saw absolutely no problem at all in sabotaging Mimiron's workshop and killing the keeper. Only he didn't quite kill the keeper.
Well, he did, but they rebuilt him.
They like rebuilt him, yeah.
His mechanomes were like, oh no, well, we'll just fix him.
They're like, oh, his spirit's still here. Well, it's okay. We'll rebuild him. So they basically rebuilt Mimiron, which is why he looks like a robot. He looks like one of the mechanomes that he created. And Mimiron was never quite the same after that.
Yeah, because he basically, the traumatic experience of being blown up and then being rebuilt into a robot form based on ones you designed kind of pushed him over the edge into full-on crazy town.
Yeah, and Logan basically took that opportunity. Once Mimiron was down, it was kind of like a series of dominoes, and it was easy enough to get the other ones. He basically confronted Freya, like, in the Temple of Life.
Yeah, with all his new guys. Yeah,
with all his new guys, and Yogg-Saron. Mm-hmm. Yogg-Saron was working for him by this point, which he thought was great because, you know, it's a lot easier to cover that whole oops, I murdered people thing when everybody's actually working for you. Like Logan at this point had become seriously unhinged, right? Mm-hmm. So he basically, you know, captured Freya and subdued her, enthralled her spirit, kind of like bound her into Ulduar. Like her spirit was broken. She didn't even really want to like leave at that point. And then he went to Hodir, did the same thing, defeated Hodir. And then Tyrion Arcadius, that's when Tyrion Arcadius come in, because they sensed that something was up with Logan.
The problem for that too is that they and their followers had been basically to the far north during all this.
Yeah.
And they'd been isolated. They hadn't come into contact with many of Logan's followers. So they didn't have the curse of flesh, you know, as bad in their ranks. They just hadn't spread through them yet. And both of them, like Tyr was a powerhouse. He was the warrior type, and Arcadius was no slouch when it came to creating things.
And Tyr he figured something was going on with Logan. All of those suspicions were confirmed because he actually saw Logan fighting Hodir. Mm-hmm. At which point he went, whoa, okay, bad things are afoot here, and I'm in no position to actually do anything about them. So, Arcadius, I want you to come with me. Iron Anya, I want you to come with me. Let's get out of here and try and figure out a game plan.
And keep in mind, too, this is still, Kalimdor is all one continent at this point.
Yeah.
So, he decides they're going to go to a fallback location. Essentially a escape point. And they start heading south to get to it. And Logan does not like this at all. Not even a little bit. So he decides, nope, I'm gonna have to take him out. But what if they contact Ra? That would be really bad. I am in no shape to fight Ra. Keep in mind, he still didn't even want to fight Odin. Like, you know, he didn't want to fight Thorim either. You look at the ones how he took them out. He confronted the ones that were not the physical powerhouses. He didn't want to fight those guys. And so he sent, what is it called? The Chithraxi Abomination?
I think so.
Chithraxi, yeah.
Yeah.
The Chithraxi are, essentially, if you've done Ulduar and you fought General Vizax, that's a Chithraxi. They're huge, very powerful. Essentially, they're like the greatest servants of Yogg-Saron. He sent that thing and a host of its followers after the fleeing keepers.
And as far as Ra was concerned, Logan was kind of thinking, well, Ra's going to be a big problem. He's going to show up. He's going to show up real soon. Why isn't Ra here yet? Why hasn't Ra shown up?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Ra should be here by now. You know,
I mean, I'm doing all sorts of horrible stuff. Why is this guy not here?
Maybe I should send some people down to Oldham just to see what's going on, because this is a little weird. He should be here by now, you know. At that point, you know, Loken had pretty much taken over Ulduar. He had taken over Ulduar, and he was so obsessed with not being seen as doing any wrong that he went to the Halls of Origination, and he changed the story there. Is it the Halls of Origination? No, not the Halls. The Halls of Stone. He went to the Halls of Stone, and
Tribunal of Ages.
Yeah, when you go to the Tribunal of Ages, you know how we had always said the Tribunal of Ages, there's something about it that just isn't right. Like, it doesn't ring with all the other stuff that we've heard already. It's because it's not right. Loken changed it. He changed it all to make it look like he was faultless and without blame in any of this. So that in the event that, Algolon came back to check in, or the Titans showed up again to check in. You know, the Titans weren't going to show up again. But, like, if Algolon came back to kind of check in on things and see what was going on, he'd be like, oh, okay, nothing's wrong here. Loken's in charge. That's how it's supposed to be. That's what these discs say. I'm out of here.
Well, isn't that interesting, too? Because, like, didn't he alter the signal to Algolon as well, so that, like, the only way that Algolon would ever be triggered is if he died?
Yeah,
because he decided to go ahead and just declare himself Prime Designate. So basically he changed it so the only event that would ever signal Algolon is if he died, which is why, you know, when we go into Northrend there and we defeat Loken in that dungeon, Algolon shows up immediately after.
See, I've always wondered if that was Loken's last little bit of sanity creeping in.
I think so.
Like, because he realized by this point, some part of him must have realized, I am totally, like, the things I'm doing seem much more like something Yogg-Saron would want me to do. It also kind of explains why when you go to Yogg-Saron's chamber, Sif is in there.
Yeah.
Because he was Sif the whole time telling Loken, no, that's totally right to do this.
And the interesting part about all of this, too, is that's why when we went to Northrend and Wrath of the Lich King, the Halls of Valor weren't there. We didn't know about the Halls of Valor. We didn't know about Keeper Odin because it was all sealed away. And all of the records, all of the records had been changed so that we didn't even have like the slightest bit of inkling about its existence in the first place. We just had these little, you know, disparate pieces that didn't quite add up for whatever reason.
Like Ulduman versus Ulduar. Like if you go to Ulduman and you find the discs of Norgannon and Ulduman, they don't agree. Because the discs of Norgannon and Ulduman were brought there by Arcadius.
Mm-hmm. So why don't we go ahead, why don't we talk about what happened with Ra? And then I think we're going to have to like kind of wrap it up because it's actually already been about an hour.
Yeah. Joe, you want to do Ra?
Well, I mean, we can kind of like, I don't know, I don't want to say speed through it, but for the sake of brevity. So Ra had this sort of awakening, right? So at this point, the Pantheon is destroyed. Everything's gone to hell in a handbasket. And
Ra got slammed with the same memories as everybody else did.
He got slammed with the same memories as everybody else's. But here's the difference. Ra figured out what was going on. So he kind of, you know, figured out, he's like, this is going to kill me. Rips it out of himself and kind of plants it. not only does he do this, but he's so wrought with, like, despair over the fact that, like, oh my, you know, everything I've known is gone. These things that created me, that gave me life and purpose are no longer here. Well, heck. And just kind of locks himself away out of, you know, basically just, he locks himself in the Mogoshan vaults and just never, like, you just don't hear from him. Like, that's just it. Like, that's why he never went to go deal with Loken. That's why he never went to go deal with what was going on, because he was just, he had a, for lack of a better term, an emo moment. He was very, very, very down about what was going on.
Yeah, because he was the one that understood what it all meant.
The
rest of them were
confused.
He was the only
one that understood what it was all meant, yeah.
The rest of them were confused, but they didn't know. Like, they wouldn't, like, understand. Like, what was that? I just felt weird emotions. But Ra knew, and that made it. He went into a depression that didn't end until even after Li Shen found him. So, yeah. But that's also the reason, ironically enough, that's why Rathion got a glimpse of what's truly going on when he ate Li Shen's heart. Because Li Shen's heart was actually Raden's heart. Li Shen pulled it out of Raden when he defeated him. And obviously, he defeated him because Raden didn't fight back. I mean, come on.
And that message that he says when he speaks, he says, "We have fallen. We must rebuild the final Titan. Do not forget."
It's probably from the Titans themselves. And when they say, "We have fallen," they literally mean,
that's,
they have
fallen. That's Norgannon's message.
Yeah. and rebuilding the final Titan is
Azeroth.
Yeah. So it actually beautifully ties all together. Like, this all kind of ties together.
And it finally makes sense after 10 years.
I just feel really bad now that I killed Arcadeus.
Yeah.
They waited all that time, and I just come in and smash them for some, like, crappy loot that isn't even any good anymore.
I just love that I was, like, spending all this time trying to figure out what was going on with the whole, the Halls of Stone, the event in the Halls of Stone, where you're with Bran, and it's talking about the history, and it's talking about the Curse of Flesh, and it's talking about everything else. And I've spent so many years trying to figure that out and going, why doesn't this make sense? There has to be a reason why this doesn't match with the other stuff. And I mean, either whoever took down those original historical records was wrong, or something's going on here, or maybe, you know, we just didn't have the whole picture. And it turns out it wasn't any of that. It was just Logan messing with things.
Well, I remember we had like a long discussion and I kept saying, but Alderaan doesn't say that. And you'd be like, but this says that. And I'd be like, but Alderaan doesn't. And you're like, yeah, but what are we supposed to, how do we reconcile? And I'm like, I don't know.
Is this perfectly justifies, Rossi, this perfectly justifies your love of Alderaan for all these years. It was that important.
Oh, absolutely. I loved Alderaan. I loved in Alderaan, the end of Alderaan where you get the discs and you have to take the discs down to Daenerys. Yeah. I loved that part.
Because, we would go there and it was like, back in the old days, you'd go there and it was just, that's where it stopped. And you're like, oh God, what now? And the best part is, obviously, Arcadius set that up, trying to send you to Uldum instead of Olduwar.
But Uldum was blocked off.
Yeah, but he didn't want you to go to Olduwar because Olduwar is where he knew Loken was.
And it was messed up.
Yeah. He wanted you to go to Uldum because Uldum is the last known resting place of Ra. And it even makes sense that Ra and Ra'dan are the same person because Ra created Uldum.
Yep.
Sun god. It's perfect.
Yeah. So it's kind of, what happened with the Keepers after the Titans left was, it was interesting because I think the aspects, obviously Tyr came into play there and brought the aspects, the dragon aspects into play as well. And it also makes me wonder, because Chronicle never actually says what the purpose of the Dragonflights was beyond protect the world or whatever. But when you got to Dragonsoul, they were pretty explicit about this is our purpose. We had to fulfill our purpose is to prevent the Hour of Twilight. So it's like, well, what do you mean by the Hour of Twilight? Do you mean the old gods rise and the void comes into play? Or is there like a specific moment that we're talking here? And it also makes the corruption of the Dragonflights that much more involved and kind of interesting. The old gods are, their influences.
Long and deep.
Locking them up did not work either, guys.
No, it didn't work. It didn't work. There's like more to them than that. And maybe that kind of ties into just what we don't understand about the void just yet. But we should probably start wrapping it up here. Blizzard Watch, it's made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch, and your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. We did mean to get to some emails today, but honestly, I think we were talking too much. Maybe next time I I want to talk about what happened after Logan's betrayal, like what happened with Tyr and Arcadius and humanity, the evolution of humanity. Or we might just take this hojillion questions that we've got sitting here and go through them.
A whole episode of answers. I'd be down for that.
And kind of address those, because I feel kind of bad because we haven't really been answering them. We just had a lot to talk about. So that kind of wraps us up here. Joe, final thoughts.
Now my final thoughts is I'm starting to wonder exactly how uneasy Tyr was and what he saw, like what he saw happening, and if maybe he pre-programmed all of the Dragonflights to have that sort of interaction or that sort of like trigger. If we all die, you all are going to have this like subroutine that runs. Go.
Okay. Rossi, final thoughts?
We're still like barely even through a quarter of this book.
We got like through another dozen pages or so.
Oh god. I'm not like upset, but man, we're never going to get done. If we do the mailbag thing the next week, we're going to just like, you know, have another hojillion questions. But what about this? Like, guys, seriously, I'm trying so hard to compress. Like, I'm leaving stuff out. I'm trying so hard to compress. Ian has to keep coming in and saying, oh, wait about this. I'm like, yeah, you're right.
It's really hard. It's really hard to cut stuff out because everything is important.
What's the thing? Like, you know, the whole thing with Helya, that itself could have been an episode, the whole Helya betrayal, because, man, she may be a villain in the game, but she is absolutely justified.
She is about as justified a villain as you can possibly get. There's a reason why she's kind of turned to darkness, and it all has to do with the former Prime Designate. So,
who is
a
jerk.
A lot of what I find interesting, particularly about all this stuff with the Keepers, is that... yes, some of it ties into Mists of Pandaria, and I love that. I love that we're tying back to these other expansions, and it's not all just what happened in Wrath. Mm-hmm. More importantly, a lot of this ties into what we will be seeing in Legion.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the fallout from this, we'll be seeing that addressed in Legion. So if you want more Legion lore before the expansion comes out, that would also be a reason to pick up Chronicle, not just because... it's an excellent book to begin with. You should probably get it. Yep. Anyway, that pretty much wraps us up. I think we will probably, I don't know, we'll deliberate whether or not we're going to do questions or we're going to talk more Chronicle. We'll figure it out. We will see you in 2 weeks, and thanks for listening, guys.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.